This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly sponsored by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. As a City supporter, we know you value delivery, and McDelivery is up there with the very best. You'll always be winning with McDelivery because just like Kevin De Bruyne, McDelivery puts your order right on a plate. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered as well. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for you tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And we go again. It's Friday, May 10th. I'm Adam Booker.
I'm Bailey Wynn.
And this is the City Report Podcast.
Comes here for Gundogan. It is a thrilling start for Manchester City. The fastest ever goal in an FA Cup final. 2023 is the City treble year. Champions of England, FA Cup winners, and now, at last, champions of Europe. Manchester City are kings of Europe. Crown.
Welcome back to the City Report Podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content. Before we get started, please hit follow, hit subscribe, leave a rating, and leave a review as we head into the last few weeks of the season. We know we get lots of new listeners, so hopefully you'll stick around and join us for all of our daily episodes. Joining me today is Bailey Wynn to take a look at City's trip to Craven Cottage this weekend. Bailey, first of all, welcome back. Second of all, how are the nerves when it comes to the final few weeks of this season? I'll be the first to admit that three games to win a Premier League title doesn't feel as daunting as it did maybe 5 or 10 years ago, but it's still tense nonetheless.
So, yeah, thanks for having me back on. And I don't think I'm nervous as I was in previous years, just because you have the much more confidence in the team. And then coming off the back of the treble, you kind of feel like we're in such a great position that we didn't expect to possibly be in like this kind of stage. It always felt like it was going to be a bit tighter. So, yeah, I do think we're kind of quite comfortable knowing that it's just the games in front for the team now to get over with.
And weirdly, it almost feels like house money. I know it's crazy to say that given what City have been for the past 5 or 6 years, but given that throughout large stretches of the season, City haven't really been at their best, and they were trying to figure out how to, you know, get Jeremy Doku into the swing of things, and Mateus Nunes didn't hit the ground running, and there was injury problems with John Stones and Kevin De Bruyne, and it's been kind of a bumpy road to get here by City standards, obviously, but it almost feels like, oh, actually, we're, you know, a few weeks away from a potential double again. It almost feels like everything is a bonus given how some of the performances have been throughout this season.
Yeah, I think the Champions League exit kind of summed that up nicely for me, whereas kind of you just look back and think, yep, that's fair enough. It ended the way it did, but we go again. You weren't really too bothered, whereas in previous years, I think it would have stung a lot more. And then, as you mentioned, with the different factors in terms of injuries, in terms of recruitment, it has been a bumpy ride. There has been a lot of players trying to fit into different positions. It's taken Pep a longer time to kind of find this best formation, best tactics, best kind of group of players on the pitch. So, yeah, I think it's just glad to be towards the end of it, I think.
Weirdly, it almost feels like this season is the transition season that everyone said last year would be. You know, obviously Erling Haaland was coming into the team last season, and that was a big transition in itself after not playing with the striker for a number of years. You know, I think last year we went into the season thinking, okay, this is going to be where there's a bit of a drop off and Pep has to figure out a new way of playing. And actually it's been this season, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think last season was probably, once you were in it, you felt like, oh, okay, we're going for a bit of a shift. Whereas this season, going into it in the summer, it was quite clear from the recruitment, from the departures, that this was going to take a while for the team to figure out. And we knew from last season, they never really figured out Haaland until later on. And it was still kind of the right exact mix of players that made it work, rather than the whole team flourish regardless of whatever the system was. So yeah, I think if you were to look at, say, Arsenal's project and think, when was the best opportunity for them to win the league, it was last season and this season. I think when we go to the next season, City should be in a much better position at the start of the season.
This is kind of an open-ended question, but do you think City have figured out how to play with Haaland? And I mean, to its peak, because, you know, last season down the stretch, obviously it was that now famous 3-2-4-1 and John Stones stepping into midfield, and you had that balance between defensive solidity, and it was defensive solidity that City rode all the way to a treble, but that you could also create chances for Haaland and De Bruyne and Grealish and Foden. But this season, we haven't seen that specific system as much, and we've seen Haaland go pretty long stretches with, you know, I wouldn't say he's been anonymous in those stretches, but not putting up the kinds of numbers we've seen. And obviously, he's still leading the Golden Boot race and scoring shit tons of goals. But considering the heights that he hit last year, do you think City have truly figured out how to play with Haaland yet? Or do you think that's still kind of in the works?
I think it depends on which way you want to look at it. So if we're just talking Haaland individually, he's had this foot injury, and it's the first season in his entire career that he's underperformed his XG. So this is not a return to the norm. This is him having a bad season by his standards in terms of converting chances. So that's one thing. In terms of the players in the squad, I think we probably have a better idea if we look at last season of how to get the best out of Haaland. But I think when we factor in the injury to De Bruyne and look at what players left last season, I don't think the players we brought in were figuring out how to get the best out of Haaland right away. So Doku was going to be a very challenging person for Haaland to figure out when he's going to put the ball into the box. Mahrez, completely different. He knows exactly where it's coming from. Gundogan, movement, knows that exactly right. Kovacic, again, it's working out that relationship on the left-hand side. And then De Bruyne being out, he is one of the best at finding Haaland, whether that's through balls, whether that's balls over the top, whether that's balls going straight onto his stronger foot. So with all those different factors, I think that kind of made it a bit of a kind of spotty season in terms of finding Haaland well. But next season, I think it's more De Bruyne getting fit, it's Foden getting in the middle, and then it's looking at who we recruit into the midfield or the wing to then get more out of him.
It's interesting you say that, because I felt like this past summer that some of the moves City made in recruitment was actually with a nod towards getting Haaland more involved. I think that's crazy to say given the numbers he put up last season, but, you know, especially the Mateo Kovacic signing, you know, everyone was talking about the numbers he was putting up with, you know, line splitting passes and passes into the final third and all of that kind of stuff. And I think that felt like it was with an aim to have City playing in a way in which there's more ball carriers on the pitch that maybe open up space with their legs, and that can get, you know, Erling Haaland into more space than we saw last season. Because, you know, everyone kind of references that his debut against West Ham, where he scored that second goal in just acres of space and was played in behind De Bruyne. And then we almost never saw that again, unless it was balls over the top from Ederson. So weirdly, it felt like this summer, I thought some of the recruitment was actually about getting Haaland more involved and geared towards how Haaland would play. And it just hasn't really shaped out that way.
No, I don't think so. But I'd go back to what I said about Doku. I think that was always going to be a process, even though all of his underlying numbers in terms of getting touches into the box and all those sort of stuff are unbelievable numbers. Like, they compare to, if not, they're ahead of Vinicius Jr. when you're looking at those kind of underlying numbers. But when it comes to converting the chances, doing the final pass and having those relationships in the final third, that's definitely taken time to happen. Definitely in Doku's case, Grealish a bit all over the place throughout the season, however people want to view that. And Kovacic, I think, to the point you made, I just don't think people have worked out that, well, coming into it, I don't think they had a good idea of what he is as a player. He is a guy that in the final third does look like he's holding his breath. It's not his best situation to be in, but those passes between the line, yeah, he can do them. He can do them to Guardiola. He can do them to Phil Foden. But the kind of passes you're talking about that De Bruyne would make, they're just not what Kovacic is meant to be doing.
Yeah, yeah, that makes total sense. And we'll get onto the Fulham game in a second, but one more thing I want to bring up before we do that is the nominees for PFA Player of the Year came out today as we're recording. It'll be yesterday for the listeners. And there's one glaring omission on there. Obviously, from City, you had Phil Foden and Erling Haaland on the list, and then you had Isak, Odegaard, Cole Palmer, Declan Rice, Ollie Watkins, and Virgil van Dijk. But Bailey, no Rodri on the PFA Player of the Year nominees? Can this actually be true?
It's just bizarre, isn't it? I think there must be a rule in terms of numbers of players from the same team, so that would probably
be why. What is this, FPL?
Yeah, it seems quite bizarre, doesn't it? But if you go through it, I think Saka's definitely one from the Arsenal fan base. I've seen that they're really surprised he's not been put ahead of Rice or Odegaard. So if that fan base is thinking that about Saka, then what on earth do City fans think about Rodri, who really should be in conversations for best player in the world and Ballon d'Or come the end of the season?
Am I right in saying David Silva was also never nominated for player of the season? I think maybe he made team of the season once. So maybe it's these quiet Spanish midfielders. They just don't get the shine that they deserve.
Yeah, I do agree. I don't think he was nominated as well. But then we've always had that kind of ongoing discussion. I've seen, I think it was Bernardo Silva and Rodri have made different quotes about these kind of nominations. Rodri saying that they're all marketing sort of stuff. Bernardo saying, well, you know, we never really expected them, so we're not really bothered. So even internally inside the team, they don't really kind of look at these awards and it has an impact on them. It's more of a kind of outside look for the fan bases and how they react.
Yeah, it's funny because I'm very much somebody that has been banging the drum that these awards are meaningless, especially awards like Ballon d'Or and FIFA Pro Player of the Year and all of that kind of stuff. But then on the flip side, when things don't go my way and a player like Rodri is not on the nominees list, then I'm throwing my toys out the pram. But what can you do?
Yeah, I think the thing with Rodri, though, is as City fans, if we were told we're only able to have two players in there, I think a lot of people would be more than happy for Rodri to be ahead of Haaland. And I think the other side of that with the Arsenal fans, if you're saying Saka has to get in and one misses out, I think they're quite happy to pick between Rice and Odegaard. They're not really that fussed. So you've got more so with Rodri, but two players that the fan bases are really quite confused as to why they're not in that conversation.
Yeah, it is a bit bizarre. We'll leave it there. We'll let that simmer. We'll come back in a moment for part two and look ahead to City's trip to Craven Cottage this weekend.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The Etihad Stadium really is wonderful at this time of the season, and the same goes for McDelivery. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome back to the City Report podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content. If you are new here, please hit follow, hit subscribe, leave a rating, and leave a review. That is the best way for us to get this show out to more Blues like you. All right, Bailey, three games left, three wins, and you've won four Premier League titles. It's been a long time since City, or at least it feels like it's been a long time since City have had a week of nothing, a week of quiet leading into a game of this magnitude, because we're used to having, you know, potentially Champions League semifinals around this time, and there seems to always be a lot going on. And I've just been kind of sitting around twiddling my thumbs, but I guess the chaos ensues this weekend, huh?
Yeah, I think it really is a quite stark change of pace, isn't it, for us when we look at these Champions League semifinals that are on in midweek, thinking it's quite weird not being involved in them because we have been for the last few years. So, yeah, it is different. And I think for the players as well, there's always that talk about momentum, isn't there, that winning every single 3 days, that's really good for the squad, as Pep always likes to roll that one out. But I do think these 3 days off that he's given the players will be beneficial. And if we're being realistic and saying we were in those semi-finals in the Champions League, I'm not entirely confident that that doesn't have, then have a significant impact on our Premier League form as well.
Yeah, I think given the way that the Real Madrid game played out, and you had, you know, Kevin De Bruyne and Erling Haaland both asking to come off, and Rodri had, you know, cinder block size sandbags under his eyes. And I think with the squad has only gotten smaller and smaller over the years since Pep has been in town, and these, you know, busy fixtures in the last 3 or 4 months of the season is starting to take its toll. It's starting to take its toll more and more each season. You know, some of those players looked absolutely dead on their feet in the FA Cup semifinals. So I do agree that typically this time of year, especially what we've seen from Pep's City side, is they like to be playing Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday, because it keeps that momentum going. It keeps the rhythm. But I think this time off has come at a perfect time. I do want to talk a little bit about the lineup, though. I'm not sure there's all that much to say, because I think we've seen from the last few games, probably starting with the game at the City Ground against Forest a few weeks ago, I think Pep he's found that 11, 12, maybe 13 players that he's going to roll with for the last few weeks of the season. And barring any sort of injuries or any other fitness issues, you know, those are the players that are going to start the games. And one of those is Mateo Kovacic, who we mentioned earlier, has been starting alongside Rodri. Is this Fulham game any different from Wolves? Is it any different from Nottingham Forest? Or are we going to see that, you know, 12 or 13 players that we expect to roll out there roll out?
I do think this is probably going to be what the lineup is now until the end. I think this is locked in. I remember the first time I was on this podcast, we were discussing, weren't we, Grealish, Doku, Alvarez, Kovacic. It was all quite up in the air whether they were going to be that 11th man on the pitch. We weren't really sure which way they would go. I think Grealish was quite popular with fans, thinking that he was going to be the answer on the left wing. But for me, it is Kovacic. It's him alongside Rodri. I think that works best for Rodri defensively and for allowing him to get forward into the box. I think in a Kanje and Ake, you've got two centre-backs that are probably at their best being sat behind those two and work the best with having Guardiola and Walker pushing up high and wide. And then the other side of that is getting the best out of De Bruyne and Foden, which for me is number one priority in this team for the remaining games.
Yeah, we've seen him, Foden, that is kind of relegated to the left, if you want to call it that. And it's a position we're obviously used to seeing him play. He played there through all of the COVID season when he wasn't playing false nine. But we've seen him more out on the right this season, and that's because we've seen Doku on the left. We've seen Grealish on the left, of course. Do you have any sort of issue with him being pushed out there and Bernardo being on the right? Because I think if you polled 1,000 City fans, what's Phil Foden's preferred positions, it'd probably be top being in central and bottom being maybe out on the left. But given the way that De Bruyne is playing, given the way that Bernardo is playing, especially in these big games, you kind of have to just put Phil Foden wherever he fits.
Yeah, he has to get into the lineup. And I think when we're talking about positions, like you were saying, with left wing, right wing, and starting in the middle, it doesn't include out of possession, in possession, and obviously we don't want to go kind of too complex, but out of possession, Foden is not trusted to sit alongside Rodri in a 4-4-2 block. Kovacic is. So Foden needs to get into the team, but he's not going to be trusted in that position the same way Gundogan is. And then in terms of playing on the right, I think that is the best position for Bernardo Silva. He knows exactly when he needs to hold width. He knows when he needs to come inside. He has a very good relationship with Kyle Walker. And then we're starting to see that emerge on the left side between Guardiola and Foden. So, like you said, for me, that is the best setup. And I think you've just got to trust both Foden and De Bruyne to do the business in the middle.
Yeah, I think this is probably the setup I'd be most comfortable with. But it's a bit weird not seeing Jack Grealish in it, because it was only, I don't know, a month ago that Grealish was starting to come back from his injuries. I think it started with that Copenhagen game in Copenhagen, where we saw that treble winning front five of Grealish, De Bruyne, Foden, Haaland, and I guess Bernardo Silva in there. And we kind of saw the old City, so to speak. And everyone was saying, well, you know, Grealish is the missing link there, and we're kind of desperate for him to come back. And he's come back and he's been kind of stop-start. But it's interesting to see that he's the man that misses out, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think when you look at the rest of the team, if you're going to put Grealish in, then you're always going to detract something away from Rodri. So whether that's him being more secure on the ball, having somebody as a partner alongside of him, and also allowing him to go forward. So I think the thing with Grealish is, for me, as good as he is and as much as he's contributed in previous seasons, we have to look at this season and look at the influence he'll have on the team. It's been very up and down, inconsistent for different reasons, whether that's form, whether it's injury, whether it's personal and other stuff. But to force him in the team over Mateo Kovacic, I think takes away from too many other players that really we want to get the best out of first.
Yeah, yeah, I think I fully agree. We've been, despite what people may say online in our mentions on an angry Saturday morning, we have been banging the Grealish drum since the day he signed, essentially. But yeah, I think it's just about right that he misses out. Any threat from Fulham? They're 13th. They're safe from relegation. They aren't going to be challenging for Europe. We were discussing on yesterday's episode, Ollie, Joe, and Amos were, about the mindset of teams that are, quote, on the beach. Is it beneficial to City to be playing teams that have nothing to play for, or is there never really any drop off, or is it just kind of something us fans like to think about going into these games, or do you think there's actually a drop off from the players that are on the beach?
It would be a great study for somebody to do, wouldn't it, on the beach, like full data kind of study into that. I think for me, it depends on the game state. Does the City get an early goal? So that Wolves game, I think if we get to halftime and it's 0-0 or it's 1-0 to Wolves, I do think that completely changes the perplexion of it. But because City get the early goal, then that really does change the way Wolves can approach that game. They really can't sit back at all. I did look at Fulham when you're looking at previous results. So when they've had less than 50% possession at home, they've won against Brighton, Arsenal, West Ham, Spurs and Bournemouth. So all teams that are quite capable, and most of them on there would have a lot of similarities to City in different ways. So yeah, I would say they are dangerous. I would say they need to be switched on. But beyond that, you're still talking about all the stuff that you would expect from City. You know, Guardiola would have been making sure they're in a good team spirit, but he'd also be hammering home that this is the game where you slip up, so you better be switched on.
Yeah, and I think Fulham is one of those teams that basically for all of their time under Marco Silva, I've considered them one of those teams that will get a lot of big results against big teams. But when it comes to playing teams in and around them, you know, 11th, 12th, 13th, then they can struggle to, you know, be the team, that be the superior team and break teams down. So yeah, I think there's a threat there, but it's City. It's Pep Guardiola. It's City in a title race. It's that time of year where they know exactly what they need to do to win the title. And up to this point, we haven't seen them slip. I'm going to knock on the wooden chest next to me here. Yeah, I think the mindset of the team is probably, well, physically fresher and as motivated as they've ever been in a title race. We saw a video of Pep Guardiola and Erling Haaland playing with a bunch of school kids on the Etihad training pitch. So I think the spirits are high, and when you're going for a fourth title, a feat that no English club has ever accomplished, spirits should be high.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the documentary kind of touched on those two sides of City that we've seen, having that great kind of team culture where everybody gets on, they laugh and they joke, but then having the other side where they're very demanding of each other and set such high expectations. So absolutely going into this match, I would expect that they are demanding the most out of each other. And at halftime, if things ain't going well, then you will definitely see Pep Guardiola make substitutions to make things right.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully that's something we don't have to see, but we'll leave it there. It's been a busy week of episodes from us, and we'll leave you with a nice light one heading into the weekend. The sun is shining here in Portland. Hopefully it will be in West London on Saturday. Bailey, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Listeners, thank you. And until next time, see you later.
Make sure you're geared up for Man City's end of season run-in with McDelivery. Great food delivered right to your door. By using McDelivery, you won't miss a moment of City's crucial run-in, and just like Kevin De Bruyne, they deliver your order exactly where you want it. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? At participating restaurants only, 18 and plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.